Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Joel Elston here. Today is Thursday, September the 27th, 2018. 8 a.m. Eastern Time, your first daily dose of happy for the day. And we hope your day and your week are going great, as it always needs to go, because that's where we're in the place where we're feeling good and all the good things happen that we're trying to attract into our lives. And that's what we're all about here at LOA Today. And Joel, I like the fact that I attract you once a week. Of course, it's prearranged, but still it is a form of attraction, and I like it. So good to talk to you again.
It's always good to be here, Walt. I'm really glad to be able to do the show. I enjoy it. As I say almost every week, this is something that I hope our audience gets something out of. But to be honest with you, I really feel uplifted, and it invigorates me as well. So it's just always a pleasure to do this.
Well, I know that our audience is getting something out of it, because our audience is growing. I mean, we've been doing a campaign lately to get people who are not subscribed to subscribe, and to get those who are subscribers to help share on social media what they're doing by listening to our podcast, and it's working in a big way. Our average listenership per episode about 3 months ago was under 100. It's now almost 200, so it's doubled in the course of a three-month period. So I can promise you people are definitely listening, and they're listening in increased numbers. I can't tell you, I'm so excited about that, and I can hardly wait to get up to the really, really high levels, or compared to where we are right now, right? I mean, like, I'm envisioning like 10,000 listeners per episode, and how exciting that's going to be, how many people we're reaching with it, and how many people are getting their daily dose of happy. So yeah, that's my thing right now.
Well, and you know, I was actually reading a post, and I don't remember exactly the context, but there was this gentleman that posted this little video clip on YouTube. Just what he thought was just one of not near as funny as something that he's done in the past, but it was just on there. And he basically just posted it on his Facebook page. Well, he laughed because when he went to bed, you know, like within 2 hours, like 1,000 people had shared it.
Wow.
And he's like, oh my gosh, it was by far his biggest post.
Yeah.
He woke up the next morning to over reaching over 10 million people.
Oh God.
And he was just flabbergasted, because in his mind, he said, it just wasn't that funny. it was for whatever reason. It's one of those things that gets shared and shared and shared. And so we're asking our audience to do it. And, you know, and I will tell you that I have an ulterior motive when I ask that. I want to get this to a bigger audience.
Yeah,
I really believe in what we are doing, and I want to get it to a bigger audience. I have always envisioned this being, something on a much larger scale than we're doing now, reaching, maybe millions of people one day, because I feel that so many people get to this way of thinking. So yes, there is, when you're saying, well, of course they want you to share it, they want to get to more people. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
We that is the concept. We don't, I never want to, you know, suggest there's anything other than that, because it is a place to do that. And I'd love to be able to make one day for this to make you a living, Walt, and
more,
you know,
like
be
all
able to,
sure, but even more than that, I just love the idea of people getting the podcast and using it to improve their own lives, to get themselves in that better feeling space. I love the way that looks in my mind. And I have talked about how I'm not really good at visualizing, but that's one thing I even if I can't see the actual image of it, I imagine to myself, what if you have like hundreds of thousands of people who are waking up every day and going into work or going to their families or whatever, say, hey, how you doing? Let's have a good day. And their families and friends are saying, what the heck happened to you? but it has a ripple effect. You know, it just keeps rippling and rippling and rippling out there. That's what I keep imagining.
Right. And I'll segue into our topic here by something you just said. You know, before I've recently become certified in hypnotherapy. It's one of my hobbies,
right,
you know, certifications and stuff. And one of the things that I was learning during hypnotherapy, and you've mentioned before, you had a hard time visualizing things, and I don't. So I never really understood. Of course, I thought you were a little wacky because of that, to be honest.
Well, thank you so much. I just really appreciate that, Joel.
No problem. But I actually learned that it, you know, my way is not the only way, which is really shocking to, especially the Southern Baptists out there, but my way is not the only way. it is this idea that everybody has things differently. And so they literally said that, you know, there are some people, because part of obviously hypnotherapy is visualizing and or feeling. And so the concept for people who can visualize, it's a really, you know, you do that. If you can't visualize, you can create an idea or a feeling attached to it's the same thing, because people have different ways of doing it. So just what you said, while you can't visualize what that looks like, you can certainly feel what that is like.
I can feel it and imagine it. I use auditory. I use sound as my thing. I auditorize or whatever that is. You know, that becomes my primary modality for imagining what it's like. And my second one is touch. That's my second best sense. So I'll also imagine what it feels like from a touch perspective, not just from an emotional perspective. And yeah, so I can kind of put an image together, so to speak.
Yes, and that's one of the, you know, that is basically, you know, the seeing, hearing, or touching are the three categories how people bring things into their, and we're going to be predominant in one and very light in the other, and it varies between everybody. Mm-hmm. So that when the law of attraction, that helps me a lot in understanding things, that I need to realize not everybody sees the world the same way or with the same set of senses that I use. And that mm-hmm. helps a lot. When we're talking to our audience, so we can say and I get it when people say, well, you say visualize this. Well, I can't visualize it. And I'm sitting there going, well, it's just not working hard enough. Well, that's not the case. For visualization for them is feel it or hear it or see it, but it's all the same concept. And the reason that matters is you and I were talking, we spent a lot of time preparing for our topic this morning, about 40 seconds, I believe. And you had mentioned, I'll summarize, this is not your exact words, but you basically said, you know, your Facebook post this week have sucked, and I haven't done anything good to you.
I said I couldn't find any inspiration, that's all.
Yeah, or again, your terminology, I couldn't find any inspiration for your Facebook post this week, so you failed, but so where we go with that, yeah, I always appreciate our humor, Walter.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite subjects within the context of the overall law of attraction, the metaphysical approach to life, is the placebo effect. You and I have talked about this around, and there's a chiropractor named Dr. Joe DiPenza, and he's really very much into the law of attraction. He's such a really a believer in it. And I had actually heard him talk on the law of attraction. I do believe he's in The Secret or one of the, I'm pretty sure he's in The Secret. Other law of attraction.
He's in who the bleep do you think you are? Or what do you think you are?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. That's where he is. He's in one of the movies for sure.
Yeah.
And so I knew but I didn't really realize his background until I actually found his book, a few years ago. It's called You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Matter.
Yeah, I just got that out of the library. Good book.
Yeah, incredible book. And what he talks about in the concept of this is, and I'll summarize in a way that he was a competitive cyclist, and he was literally hit by a vehicle while cycling, and it created huge damage to his spine and, you know, stuff that's always perceived and, you know, almost really stuff that can't be reversed. And he went to multiple doctors and he had several opinions, and everybody came to the same exact conclusion that he needed steel rods and fusions and steel rods in his spine.
Yeah, pretty massive surgery.
And now, being a chiropractor, he realized that what that meant. I mean, he's going to be greatly limited for the rest of his life. And,
right.
And there's very chance what you put that in there. So his family basically were even trying to say, you know, he kept saying, I don't want to do this. His family, you've got to do this. If you don't have this done, you could be permanently injured. And he kept being told by everyone that this is what he had to do. And then then another surgeon came to him and basically said, well, I have a better procedure, but it it still was not what he wanted. And it still wasn't what he thought he could do. So he started with a process of literally thinking his way to healing his spine. And he literally laid in bed and he spent most of his energy and time just focusing on healing. He named the chemicals necessary to heal. He did the research of everything that would have to take place. And these are things that normally can't heal, or at least traditionally have been thought they couldn't heal.
Right.
But he spent all of his energy and focus on healing. And
I was impressed too when he was telling the story, because I was just reading that story. One of the things he mentioned is that he spent 4 hours a day on this. So you aren't exaggerating when you say he spent most of his time, because he would spend 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, and then some time in the evening. It was his focus all day long.
Right. Right. And that's where his energy. And so he understood, it really was that idea that he was able to understand, wait a minute. I have to keep working mentally. And that's where my answer is. And so the term placebo effect is often perceived as something that, you don't necessarily, believe is real. Mm-hmm. And I disagree with that strongly. We've talked about this placebo effect on the show before, but this being something that is greatly overlooked in science, the placebo effect, I happen to believe, is healing. Sometimes you take a pill that helps the body heal because you believe it's going to work. And I know that the placebo effect has a really big effect on healing. I don't know if you're familiar with a gentleman named Milton Erickson. Are you, Walt?
I recognize that name, but I can't say I know anything about him, so tell me.
Okay, he is one of the original mental health psychiatrist type people in the world. I mean, he really an incredible brain, and how this started for him when he was 17, he contracted polio. And this is obviously before the, everything was cured, polio become curable, and treated where it goes away. Basically we've killed, got rid of the disease. Mm-hmm. There was no cure. There was no fix. And people who got polio were permanently disfigured.
Oh yeah.
He literally lost consciousness for 3 days. He almost died.
Wow.
So he woke up from it and he couldn't walk. He was paralyzed. There was nothing. And of course the doctors of the time that say, there's nothing that you can do. So he was living with family members, and what he started to look at, he was looking around and he saw the interactions of family members. This is what got him interested in being a psychiatrist, and what led him to believe a bunch of different things. So he started looking at what was going on around him. He saw the interactions of family members. One of the family members, somewhere in this equation, I don't remember who the family member was, but there was somebody had a baby. And I guess it was like his nephew, for example, who the baby was like his nephew. And while he was there, he was, obviously the baby was walking, learning to walk, and he started looking at the baby learning to walk. And he's like, huh. And they heard the language of encouragement that the family was giving. And so he was observing this interaction, and he watched this baby, stand up, fall. And so what he started doing, he started using what he saw from the baby. And he started this, he implemented the baby's technique in learning to walk.
Really?
And he would do, and he would fall. And then when people say, no, you don't need to try that, you can't walk, he actually talked to them about saying, no, let's please stop that. Please start talking to me in a positive way about let's help. And they did that. He started really understanding not just verbal language, but nonverbal language and the images that are being projected.
Wow.
And so he actually started standing up and saw the how the baby was standing up. Then that led to him being able to stand up and walk. Then he had to learn to swim again. He did this through, again, mimicking other people learning to do these things, because his assumption was if it could be learned once, it could be learned again.
Yeah.
And so he is one of the this is the concepts of hypnotherapy. He is sort of the one of the founders, I would say, of actual hypnotherapy. Hypnotism has taken place in form for years and years, but he's actually made this into a therapy form. He actually did make that years ago into a therapy form. And he saw how it affected him by that mental reframing of the brain, by instead of accepting he couldn't walk. And so fast forward to Dr. DePinzia, who many, many, many years later is lying in bed and decides to do these same techniques. Now, I don't know if Dr. DePinzia actually looked at Milton Erickson as his role model. It certainly sounds like it from the description, but I don't remember him mentioning that in the book.
Yeah.
But it is that same theory of visualizing and or feeling or knowing what's taking place. One of the things that I have seen people that have cured cancer with their mind and diet. I'm not espousing, little disclaimer there, not listening to your doctor. Please listen to your doctor. I'm not saying you can cure cancer on your own. But I know people that have claimed they've cured cancer on their own by laying in bed, like Dr. DePinzia has said, by eating the right foods and visualizing for hours upon hours in a day of healthy antibodies and anti-cancer agents in the body eating the cancer up. And they literally spend their energy doing that, focusing on it. That is a placebo effect. It's the mind believing and healing. And I am excited, and I bold intent state, I believe placebo effect is the most effective form of healing there is. I think it is the form of healing. And somehow science has dismissed it as, oh, it's just a placebo effect. It's like, well, thank God it's a placebo effect.
Yeah, right.
But that's where healing takes place.
Exactly. In fact, I'm not sure what the pronunciation of his name is. He spells it DISPENZA, which sounds like Dispenza. But you're saying DePinzia, so I don't know how he pronounces it. But you may be right. All I know is that
I've heard him say it is the only reason that I say DePinzia? It that way.
Okay. Maybe that's what it is. But anyway, first of all, when you're reading the book, the story you told about him in the cycling accident is right in the preface of his book. And you can tell he's a doctor because he goes into such graphic detail. I was practically throwing up when I was reading it. So I had to kind of skip past that portion just because I couldn't handle it. It was really, very graphic. But anyway, he next starts telling stories about people who had literally thought themselves to death, including people who thought they had cancer. They really had only a very small amount of cancer, but because they received a wrong diagnosis that their body was full of cancer, they died. And people who had other things that they thought were wrong with them, they didn't have wrong with them at all, and they died. Those same people would get a reprieve because they thought that some wonderful drug had just cured them, and so they'd be cured. And then they found out that the government said that the drug was nonsense, and they fell back into the condition they were in before. And DePinzia noticed this. And he said, what is going on here? This is crazy, but it's really interesting. What's going on? And of course, that's what leads to his story about the placebo effect. But you mentioned how important you think placebo is in healing. And I agree with you. And I want to take it a step further because he tells the story of, I can't remember the guy's name. He was a surgeon, an army surgeon during World War II. And apparently toward the end of the war, there was an extreme shortage of morphine, which was the painkiller of choice for surgeons who were working on injured soldiers. Well, in this one particular case, he tells how a nurse, they had no morphine. They needed to do immediate surgery on the soldier. It was critical surgery. It would have been very, very painful without the morphine. There was no morphine. So a nurse on her own took a syringe, filled it with, I think, sterile water or something like that, injected it into the patient, says, okay, the patient's ready. He performed the surgery, and the patient behaved like he wasn't feeling any pain at all, and he was amazed by it. So they kept using that procedure over and over again because they had to. They didn't have any morphine. And he later on became the person who was at the forefront of doing what they call double-blind studies, because he argued that this placebo effect was messing up the results of scientific studies being done. And so the entire scientific community adopted the idea of separating out placebo by doing double-blind studies, a double-blind study being one where you have actually three different groups. You have your control group, you have your test group, and then you have the test group that or the control group that produces a placebo effect, so to speak. And that way they figured they could sort out the placebo effect. And I read about that and I thought, first of all, wow, I mean, here's a guy who basically discovered placebo and dismissed it. If he was like on the forefront, he came up with a great idea and then he said, this is interfering with what we're doing. And the second thing that caught my attention with it was, I wonder if you think about how they separate out that double blind or even triple blind. They sometimes do triple blind where even the statisticians don't know who got what drug or whatever. If you look at what they do there, they're trying to say if there is no drug, that means it's placebo. So therefore that can be separated out as a placebo effect. But here's what they don't seem to be able to test for. How do you test for somebody who has a placebo effect who got the drug? There's no way that I know of to test that. So that raises another question. How many of the positive results that come from drug trials are actually attributable to placebo? And we don't know the answer to that.
Well, yeah, and I don't have the answer either, but I am such a believer in my own life. My reality is the way I see it. So my recovery or my health or my healing is how I see it, period. Mm-hmm. It's the answer. And that's the placebo effect. It's such a strong event, that it is, not being a conspiratorialist most people I know that are medical doctors are really, really good people.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And, very dedicated.
I've always appreciated the work they've done. So, but they're taught a certain method. And so they're taught things that are, we don't want that. It's not, if you go see a surgeon, he's trained to tell you how operating will work. If you go see an acupuncturist, he's trained to tell you how, acupuncture works and using acupuncture. And my dear friend and mentor, Dr. Master here in town, him and I were having a discussion one day and I asked him, there's many different procedures and concepts and science of therapy. And you'll have therapists argue is cognitive behavioral theory the best way is, rapid eye movement, mm-hmm. that helps with trauma. And I was asking all these things, there's so many options out there. So which one is the one that works the best? And his answer, this is a renowned psychiatrist. He's 80 years old and he's done amazing things. And he goes, Joel, he says, it's what the patient believes in. He said, when the therapist believes that the rapid eye movement procedure that he or she is using is working, the patient buys into it and it works.
Wow.
The tapping or the acupuncture or all that, he said, it's believing that it works is the answer. It's the method is really irrelevant. The results show when you have a connection with your therapist, when you're believing with the person walking you through this, you really believe they're helping you. That is what people report as the most successful type things to use. And I thought that blew me away and he said, but we just told the audience that. So he probably didn't want me to do that only because we don't want anybody to not believe their stuff works. Why not? It, of course it works. It works because you believe it works.
Yeah.
And that's the placebo. And it just like you're saying, we've done that. I've done it with my middle son, Chris. We've traveled to Florida one time and I left. He had he took a medication called Seroquel at night to help him sleep. I never was happy that he was on that drug but it was something that, I was sort of handed down from adopting within foster care. So we got down to Florida and of course I'd left the Seroquel at home.
Oh.
And, so he wasn't going to be able to sleep and that was going to mean I wasn't going to be able to sleep. So I had these little, in my bag, I had these little, 250 milligram vitamin C pills. And so I told him, I said, look, this is a grown-up sleep medication, and it's not for kids. I said, I'm going to cut it in half. And in fact, no, I'm going to cut it in quarters. I said it that way. You probably just need a quarter. So why don't you take a quarter of it, and if it's not strong enough, I'll give you the other half. But that's the most a child can take. And so I gave it to him in about 5 minutes. He said, I feel a little sleepy. Can I get that other half? And I said, yeah, I'll go ahead and give it to you. He zonked out.
So he went to bed on 125 milligrams of vitamin C. That's cool.
Exactly. And so I said, well, son, I said, you seem to have slept better with that than you did the other medication. He goes, I know, I really do. I said, well, I want to ask the doctor if we can change you to this medication because it helps you sleep better. And he goes, I like that. From that night forward, he never took another Seroquel. And every night he had basically whatever it ended up being 150, 200, and I cut him in half, 125 milligrams of vitamin C every night. And that's his medication for the next several years to help him sleep.
Wow.
Because he believed that strongly in it.
Yeah.
And just like they're talking about within the war, the mindset of things, you know, I see it in addiction. Here's a, our example, but I know with an alcoholic that is in the process of, say the alcoholic hasn't drank alcohol in 3 or 4 days, and they're really craving it really bad. The idea that once they decide they're trying to quit, they can't quit. Once they decide to go buy the alcohol and go ahead, once they make the decision to go ahead and drink, they report, long before the alcohol hits their body, the mindset of what alcohol is going to do for them. And one of my favorite examples, and again, this is all within the placebo effect idea. I was running a group a couple of years ago at a treatment center for heroin addicts and opiate addicts. And one young lady was on Suboxone, which is a drug to help people on opiates get off of them. Mm-hmm. But it still has opiates in them, but it's has an antagonist as well. So I was running a group on a Saturday morning. Our doctors are not normally there on Saturdays. So she came into the group. She said, Joel, she said, the pharmacy wouldn't fill my medication yesterday. I need you to reach out to the doctor. I'm not going to be able to make it through the weekend without relapsing. And she was sitting on the floor, rocking back and forth, sweating, real red face, holding the pillow and clearly suffering. And so I had texted our director of doctor and I said, can you please help me with this? And she's clearly suffering. I have 12 other people in group and she is truly distracting. I don't want to ask her to leave, but this is, you know, I need an answer. Mm-hmm. And so he texted me back and he said, I'm going to be in the area and by the end of group, I'll be there. Tell her I'll get her something to get her through the weekend.
Okay.
Instantly, she put the pillow down. Everything went away. And she sat calmly through the remainder of group until the doctor got there.
Wow.
Everybody's like, well, she was manipulating you. No, she was in severe withdrawal state of mind. But once she knew there was a remedy, she was able to sit up in a chair and participate in group.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the placebo effect. Knowing that her quote unquote drug was on the way was enough to appease her right then. And that, when you look at those kinds of things, how many things in our lives, you know, we're anticipating, you know, you're going to behave. I tell a story about, you know, this young man that I've worked with that bought into all these diagnoses of mental illness and stuff that he, when he was in foster care, and he behaved to his diagnosis. And once he realized that none of them were true, he instantly changed his behavior to an entirely different thing. So we all have that in our lives. When you really believe it, when you really, that is the law of attraction, that we attract all this stuff. We have the cure for every, again, disclaimers of all the doctor stuff. You see your doctor, right. And I'm not giving medical advice. I personally believe for me, my body can heal whatever comes along as long as my mindset of belief is that my body can heal.
Which raises the question for those of us who are not facing a dread condition of some kind, but just like an everyday, ordinary condition, you know, and that condition is just, maybe it's chronic, maybe it's not chronic, maybe it's just something we're dealing with today. But whatever it is, what can we do to use the same concept of the placebo to improve our daily lives? Because that to me is where the biggest potential is. I mean, we always like to think in terms of, you know, what's the most extreme condition and what can we do for that extreme condition? That's like, there's something appealing about that in the human psyche. But right. I also think it's much more interesting to see what can we do in terms of our daily lives, because that's a pretty powerful effect. We can actually kill ourselves or right. We can heal ourselves with our minds is what the idea is. Well, if we can do that, what else can we do?
Well, and I'll give you an example of one that I work with directly. It's a very good friend of mine. This was not a client. This is a gentleman. I've told this story on the air before, I believe, probably a year or so ago. I have a friend who I used to work out with. He's a couple years younger than I am, really fit, always eating well. So randomly, I get a call from him on a Saturday evening, and he said, I have some horrible news. I don't know how to share it to you. So I forget the stage, like stage 3 liver cancer or something, or I have some liver cancer. And I'm like, what? I said, no. I said, that's, and he goes, no. He said, I can't believe it. And, so I talked to his wife and she said, yeah, it's, we found out on Thursday. We're going back for, the official, where they really get to the size of everything and what options we're going to have available. We have that in 2 weeks, but he's already lost probably 10 pounds in a few days. He's gray. I'm like, oh my God. She said, I don't think he's going to make it. And I was like, oh, what? And this is a really good friend.
Yeah.
So I worked it out. I worked it out where I could get down there. And so I get down there, probably about a week later, and he's in bed. He had basically gone on leave from work and he's in bed and he looked, I don't know how much weight he'd lost at that point, but he looked horrible. He was very shaky and I'm going, oh my God, you look, and I'm trying not to say this out loud. My face gave it away and I go, oh my God. And he said, I don't know if I'll live, Joel. I said, I can't imagine that you're going to die. Doesn't seem possible. And I said, are you able to work out? Oh no, I'm in too much pain. I can't eat. I said, I don't know if that didn't sound right. I said, you need to get up and get to the gym. And he goes, no. I need my energy to heal. I went, okay, well, you listen to your doctors and stuff. I said, but it doesn't feel right. So, they had an appointment. I don't know, that following Tuesday, I was there on a weekend. I left. I said, please call me. I said, let me talk to your doctor, anything I can do.
Yeah, you really wanted so to help. That's great.
Yeah. And so it was about 9 in the morning. His wife texted me. She said, we're going in. We'll text you when we get done. Well, I'm literally in between sessions looking for the text. And I keep saying, okay, what's wrong here? What's wrong? Finally at 1:30, I get a call. And she said, I said, what happened? And is everything okay? And she goes, it's not even believable. And she goes on to explain that they get in there and they first thing they did a contrast MRI where they, where they get in there and they see the cancer and then they came back and they did another one and then they came and did some other kind of scan. And after about 6 or 7 various scans and blood tests, the doctor comes in and goes, the original, there's no sign of anything. The best we can figure, we're looking at this, the best we can figure is the results on another patient from before got substituted with yours and there's another patient that has been confirmed, but this, you're fine.
Wow.
And so he calls me, I said, well, I don't even want to talk to you right now. You need to get your ass to the gym and I want you to go eat a lot of food. And it was in about a week and a half, he gained his weight back. He's back in the gym. His color was back. He almost killed himself mentally.
Wow. Wow.
And I saw it happen. And the reason that it's relevant to our topic is if you can kill yourself mentally,
yes,
I have to assume you can heal yourself mentally.
Exactly. Yes. And not just dread stuff too. That's the thing. That's why I'm wondering. What can we do with like everyday stuff? You know, because I think it's the same principle, isn't it?
It is. Well, and that's why I want to break it down. You know, when I went to him and I saw him, and I'm asking him why he stopped his routine. You know, in my mind, if I ever were to get a diagnosis, which I don't even see as likely at all, but if I were to get something like that, I'm like, oh no, that's just a challenge at this point. I'm going to be in the gym more. You know what I mean? That would be me. And so I think we apply it to life. When you lose that job or when there's financial issues, taking action, believing. One of the things we talked about, and I haven't had a chance to download the information to you, but there's a process that I'm working with now that I've learned in the hypnotherapy school I went through. It's called the mental bank.
Yes, you mentioned that.
And the mental bank is a we'll do that on one of our shows. One of our biggest supporters. I don't have permission to say her name, but that listens to us every week, and she's working on the mental bank right now and reporting great success early.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I am a big believer in this concept, and the mental bank is basically a way of helping the mind achieve and help the mind see and keep focused. So you break it down, you break all this down into little action steps. No matter what's going on, when, you know, your finances are a mess. Well, they're a mess and they are. So what are we going to do with that? How mm-hmm. are we going to handle that?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take action into little steps. You go at it. You heal things by believing they're healed first, and that heal your finances, living as if you're that way, visualizing, or in your case, feeling or hearing what success or mm-hmm. financial abundance is.
Mm-hmm.
What does it taste like?
Yeah.
And those are, that's the energy of the law of attraction. That's the stuff we talk about. Within the context of my hypnotherapy, there's an incredible section there's tons of free literature on this stuff online. It's called NLP or Neuro-Linguistic Programming.
Right.
And it is a concept that is adjacent to, or if not a direct product of, the law of attraction. And it is how you can work on pre-programming or reprogramming your brain to a success or a happy mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And it is incredibly effective. There, reframing is a tool that I use every day in my practice. And reframing is taking every scenario and replaying it in a positive or a directed manner. I read a thing on Huffington Post the other day, and I don't know the man's name, and I hope everybody will hear me through because it's going to sound really bad in the beginning.
Okay.
It's this young man, he's gay, and he tells a story when he was 17, his sister, who he had confided into that he was gay, had told her dad, and his dad was a very strict Christian.
Oh, geez.
And, basically came to him and said, you have to go to church every day, see a therapist, date a woman, or you got to leave my house.
Mm, wow.
And again, not defending, but this is probably back in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
So it was a different mindset for a lot of people. Again, try not to judge on that end. It's frustrating to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
But what this man describes, Walt, is he ended up somehow in like Louisiana with $100 in his pocket and nowhere to go.
Wow.
And through a lot of work and through a lot of energy, he put himself through school. He got an advanced degree. He became a graphic artist. He worked for a massive company that he makes a fortune working for these really big companies. And his focus is over the trauma of what took place for his father. And I'm not minimalizing that. That would be a horrible thing to be 17 years old.
Sure.
Cast out from your family on something that's way beyond your control, totally out of your control.
Right.
But at the same time, if I'm working with him, my focus is on his resilience, his father's unintentional gift of resilience. He put him up where he set him up where he had to be successful. The empowerment of that story is he is possibly more successful today than he ever would have been if those chain of events didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Like me eating out of a trash can mm-hmm. led to a chain of events that turned everything around in my life. Not a great story as far as that moment. If you stop at the story in the trash can eating day, not a good story.
No.
If you fast forward, what an incredible story.
Yeah.
And that is, again, within the context of the placebo effect. It mm-hmm. is what we believe. It's when all else is lost, how do we apply these things on a daily basis? What else is there? You know, at some point, you just got to move forward and say, I believe in me. I'm going to put this energy. And it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. The concept, anybody that believes what we're talking about is easy hasn't tried it. It is incredibly hard, and there's going to be some sweat attached to it. There's going to be energy expended. There's going to be effort expended. There's going to be struggle. It doesn't mean it happens without all those things. It means you believe you can do it. You overcome everything. Every great invention or company or life was built on struggle. I believe that with my struggle through it, you develop something, and that's exciting. So when people are going through struggle, part of my reframing is helping them understand struggle is awesome if you allow it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And I'm especially interested in that mental bank thing. Cause we talked about that offline about a week ago, and you're going to send me stuff and you haven't had a chance to do it. But when you brought it up again, I'm thinking, wow, that sounds really good. Because one of the things you said was something like, it helps you if you have trouble, if you kind of struggle with maintaining your focus and so forth. And I'm thinking a lot of people, I've been through that. A lot of people probably go through that. You know, so having that kind of tool available, that sounds really appealing. So, I mean, let's, make some time or whatever to put, like you said, do it in an episode, talk about that. Cause that sounds like a really fascinating process you got there.
It works. It's sort of a very fancy version of a vision board, but it's a daily, almost a daily journal, and it walks you step by step of how to put your time. The mental bank concept, it rewards you or pays you for listening to a podcast, for doing self-help, for working, and you really start realizing all the stuff you're doing, and you're logging that, all the positive stuff toward your life, you're logging that at a specific rate, and it helps you start visualizing. It starts helping you visualizing success, and you start living that. That becomes your reality. I've had three people on it for over 2 months, and all three are reporting massive changes in the areas that they want to change us in. And it's not just a money-based system. Money is sort of the center of it because that's what humans view as a currency of success, mm-hmm. but it applies to helping yourself and helping improve other areas of your life too.
Right. Health and relationships and everything else, I would think. That sounds really
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah,
we're going to have to do that. That's good. In fact, it kind of reminds me, first of all, Dipenzia, he tells in his book stories of people who came to his workshops. Cause I think the first sentence in his book was, I never intended to be in this field or something like that. And it just kind of fell on him, probably because of the bike accident, and partly because he just kept discovering the stuff and sharing it with people. And they said, we want more, we want more, we want more, until finally got to the point where he had accumulated quite a bit of information. He was sharing it in his workshops and his presentations and so forth. And he was getting spontaneous healings from people who were in the audience, who would jump up, grab the mic and say, I am a completely different person. I'm in a different state. I'm a different place. And all of a sudden, my symptoms of whatever I was dealing with were gone. And in fact, he says at one point he brought in some specialists with scanning equipment, various medical scanning equipment, and found that people were experiencing changes in their brainwave patterns out of just being at the darn conference and thinking, what the heck? So, I mean, when you're talking about the three people who you mentioned are currently working with this mental bank thing, I guess it does really surprise me after reading what Dipenzia has to say. But boy, does that sound promising when you can make that kind of change that quickly?
Well, probably the fifth thing on my list to do coming up is I'm going to, become certified in, bio and neurofeedback.
Oh.
And what I like about that, and here's an example of again, how you can control things. And this is a very, for any doctors listening, and they're going to laugh at my explanation, but I want a very
Well, I'll laugh in advance. They'll just like pre-laugh, so the laugh is out of the way now, okay?
Thank you. You can send all inquiries to Walt at LOAToday.net. That is Walt at LOAToday.net. What the concept of like biofeedback, for example, would be is you have sensors on the around the body picking up heart rate, sweat in the skin, various functions of the body that can indicate stress. And so, like, if something is, say, money is your big problem and it causes you a lot of anxiety. So what I would do is we'd hook you up to these machines, Walt, and then I would have you, I want you to create a huge amount of stress. I want you to awfulize every situation. Take it to the worst conclusion. You're homeless. You're this. And then you build it up and you'll literally hear the sound of the machine. It has a frequency attached and right. It starts getting higher, high pitched. And you'll hear that. You'll hear it peak.
Yes.
And then I'll say, Deep breath. Let it all go. Immediately it dives down.
Yeah.
Well, you do that the next time. The next time it doesn't go quite as high and it goes a little further down.
Really?
The next time, and you get to a point where you're desensitized to it. Your body, you have now controlled it.
Because I've experienced that.
It's fascinating to watch it happen.
I've experienced the first part of that where you can actually move the needle, so to speak. There was a time when I had what I thought was a heart attack was actually a panic attack. I actually literally ended up in the emergency room, and they hooked me up to all the stuff, you know, and so they got all the beep, 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 and all that kind of thing. And at one point, where my wife and I are sitting there waiting for the doctor, and nothing to do, and we got to talking about, you know, how people are able to manipulate this stuff. And so we started playing with it. We said, well, let's see if you can you slow the breathing? Yes, I can slow the breathing, and it shows up. Can you slow the heartbeat? Well, yeah, I can slow the heartbeat. Could I speed it up? Yeah, kind of along the lines that you said. Just get, you know, frantically excited about something, and the heartbeat would speed up. And, wow, you really can't control this stuff. So that part I already knew about. But to hear that if you awfulize and then relax and awfulize, relax, you actually overall, over the long haul, lower your tendency to awfulize and desensitize yourself to it. Wow. Really cool. Really powerful.
Yeah. Well, and the process of doing it, then eventually you don't need to hook yourself up to a machine to
right.
do it. You
oh,
can
yeah.
just learn how to do it. And it's such an empowering tool. I've seen a lot of people report, all this is figuring out exactly what we're talking about. Inside of your brain, inside of your body, inside of your mind, whatever your image of all that is, exists the answers to everything that bothers us that is there. Mm. Learning to access it is the answer. It's learning to access how to control the brain. When you give somebody a benzodiazepine like a Xanax, it really does help with anxiety in an incredible way for a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to need another one. And it's not going to help quite as much. So you might need a little more. Then you might need like five. And then you're in a complete anxious state all the time if you don't have five of them in your bloodstream at all times. And so not an effective way to treat it. It really actually the same thing that treats the anxiety creates the anxiety eventually.
Yeah.
When you understand inside of you, like the panic attacks, one young man reports of not one of my clients, this is a client in California that I was doing some hypnotherapy work, understanding I got to get a certain amount of hours in.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was explaining to me that how he's so into this process because in his neurofeedback session, he actually happened to be in his doctor's office while he was having a panic attack. So the doctor hooked him all the way up right then. Immediately, he's at the highest level of readings across
wow.
the board. He was full-blown panic attack. And they did that exercise, and he was able to mentally bring his panic attack down to baseline.
Wow.
And he then started learning, if I can do that mentally, he defeated panic attacks with this technique. And it's such an amazing thing. So people who have experienced panic attacks, and I had I want to differentiate again. Of course, our people who are going to be listening for the detail, there are anxiety attacks and panic attacks, and but for the sake of our discussion, no need to describe them differently. We're just calling them panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Panic attacks, in general, are, they can feel just like a heart attack. It mimics a heart attack.
Oh, yeah.
Then the thought that you're having a heart attack sends you further into the panic attack.
Yeah.
And,
I experienced it.
It is
frightening.
It's a debilitating.
Yeah.
And, you know, you realize that, wow. And then, but once you realize it's being created in your brain, most people, I hope, can jump to the conclusion that if my brain's creating it, my brain can fix it. And that's where
I can tell you that I didn't. That's why I'm so excited about the second part of the exercise, because when it happened to me, what I felt was relief that it was only in my head, but I didn't actually jump to I can fix it. What I jumped to was, how did I create it?
Right. Sort of dismantling and sort of getting, because I guess you're right. That would be the next. And when I had it, I, of course, my arrogance, I'm like, clearly the doctor didn't know what he's talking about. I had a heart attack. He missed it. That's right. What I went to, because I would never have a panic attack.
Of course
that
would not.
Be
no.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. And so after two or three doctors telling me there's nothing wrong with my heart, I had to accept there was something going on there. Now I didn't. Mm. You know, I was in the middle of a bunch of chaos, so I never really applied it back then. But now that I understand it, we had a guy that I do public speaking with occasionally. I've never been fearful of public speaking. That may shock our audience, but I've never had that go on. I enjoy it. But one of the guys that I have done several events with, really nice guy, and I won't name his name because he don't want me to talk about this, but he came to me one day and we were before a few thousand people in Charlotte, and he goes, I am so scared. Mm. I'm like, of what? And he goes, I never talked to this many people. And I go, well, what does it matter? 100 or 2000? I don't, and in my mind, I just don't see the difference.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we walked through those techniques of, we'll sit down, let's talk about it. And let's take it to the extreme. So what are you going to do? You're going to fall down. Your pants are going to fall. Whatever. You're going to forget all the word. And yeah. And so he's got, and he goes, you're not helping. I go, now deep breath, release it. We did that like four or five times. Just right there. And before he went on, we had like an hour, so we went on stage.
Yeah.
And, he nailed it. He came off and he goes, oh my God, that's incredible. And I said, yeah. And it's something that really, really works. It really, you know, it's something that I've learned it. Now I didn't have a name for all this until I understood it. But that's a form of self biofeedback and eventually the machine's irrelevant. The machine is a tool early.
Yeah.
That it tells you. And neurofeedback, biofeedback is reading the more of the body functions, whereas, that's biofeedback is body function and neurofeedback is brain waves, but it gets to the same point.
Mm-hmm.
They made some intricacies and difference. One's not better than the other. It's just, a different way to get there, but it's all that same concept of learning to control it. There's some programs online. There's some home tools. You can buy your own biofeedback equipment that attaches to your head and you learn to do that yourself. But it's, regardless of how you get there, this is the concept of the placebo. This is the exciting piece. If all of this is real, which I believe it is.
I do too.
This changes most people's perspective of everything.
Yeah.
And again, that's every week I say that this is the kind of stuff that excites me. It's why I get up every day to help. Not that other people are trying to fight against us in this mission, but there's so much energy when you can fix yourself, that scares people who rely on money of fixing you.
That's true.
Or minimally, and it also goes against, you know, like a lot of my doctor friends who I give great credit for. I have majority of my friends are in the therapy field and many are doctors and, they may roll their eyes at me sometimes and think I get a little far out there, but they're open to the idea. They love that. Dr. Master, as I said, my mentor, he's shockingly on board with these concepts and I don't know anyone more, more qualified person in the field than him. So there are people within the field who are open to this idea and it's growing. So as our audience grows, as this thought process becomes more exciting to the average person, I think the power of the group increases this whole thing. We have a very bizarre time we're living in right now, but I don't think things are bad right now. I think they're on the way to being really good.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people being very frustrated by a lot of stuff going on, particularly in the public eye. But even in that stuff, I'm seeing potential for really good things coming out of it. And I'll say that to people and they'll look at me like, you know, what, do you have like an antler growing out of your head or something? But seriously, that's what I think. I just think I look at some of the stuff that is dominating the headlines and I say to myself, that's leading to something good. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's leading to something good. And I hear about stuff going on in the medical field. I mean, we have a good friend who is currently dealing with a very severe case of cancer, and he is making some progress, but it's a kind of one of those cancers that is considered to be inoperable and unhealable, and yet he's making some progress. And I'm thinking to myself, there's going to be a good result in here. There's going to be a really, really good result in there. I'm just seeing it that way. Maybe I'm just being Pollyanna. I don't know, but I don't think I am.
Yeah, I don't think you are either. If you look at the history of what happens, the pendulum swings, and sometimes it takes chaos on one side to create healing on the other side. And that's a lot of what's happening in our world today. Mm-hmm. There will be change. There's things coming up. It's super exciting. And,
yeah.
and you know, but when we break it down for our audience today who are listening, whether you agree or you disagree with any of those things, what really matters if you get nothing else, you are in control of so much more than you realize. You're being told you're not. You're being told there is so much in your control right now that you can fix your world. And by fixing your world, you can help other people fix their world just by the example you lead. And if enough people start fixing their world, the world itself gets fixed. That's the overall view. And I see it in because that's what my perspective's tuned to. I see that daily in my life, and I'm blessed to have the life that I have to be able to see that.
That's a great thing, too. And, by the way, I did want to thank you for giving out my email address so that all the hate mail can come to me. I thought that was very great of you. So thank you. So gracious.
No problem.
But I also want to return the favor because you actually are an extremely wonderful life coach, and I'm not a life coach. But for those who want something where they can talk to somebody directly, that they got something going on in their head, something bothering them, I'm your person to talk to about that. How do they reach out to you?
Joel Elston at Gmail is my email account, and joelelston.com is my website. Both ways get to me. Would love to speak with you if you just need guidance on where to go find help. I can help you with that too. So I love doing the show with you, Walt. And I really want our listeners to, as you're saying, subscribe and post us on social media. Let's help this thing grow.
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to reinforce that as well. Because if you're not a subscriber, you're missing out. We're doing 11 shows a week, most weeks. I mean, it's actually this coming weekend. I won't be able to do a couple shows because Louise and I are going to North Carolina for my niece's wedding on Saturday. So that's going to be really exciting. So we'll miss doing Friday shows and maybe a Monday show. But most of the time we're doing 11 shows a week, and you don't want to miss them. They're all different. I've got 8 different co-hosts. Joel's just one of them, and he's like one of the most amazing ones. But 8 different perspectives, 8 different people. 6 of them are life coaches, and you don't want to miss out on any of those episodes. So please, if you're not a subscriber, take the time to subscribe. The instructions are on the homepage at loatoday.net. Really easy to do on your smartphone. If you're on an iPhone, just go to your podcast software that's built in, open it up, do a search on LOA Today, bang, there we are, click the subscribe button. On an Android phone, if you don't currently have podcast software installed, easy enough, go to the Play Store. The one we're recommending now is Google Podcasts. It's becoming very, very popular on Android, and it's a great way to connect in. And once you install that app, just again, open it up, search for LOA Today, and boom, there we are. And yes, please do keep posting about social media about listening to LOAToday.net. It's really, really helping, both on a law of attraction energy basis and on a pure social media basis. It's working both ways. And Joel, I look forward to talking to you in a week. Please send me that info, okay? Let's start looking at doing that episode about the mental bank.
That would be great, my friend. I certainly will.
All right. And we'll see you all next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.